47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation, or any nation so conceived and so dedicated, can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We have come to dedicate a portion of that field as a final resting place for those who here gave their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men, living and dead, who struggled here, have consecrated it far above our poor power to add or detract. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here, but it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather, to be dedicated here to the unfinished work which they who fought here have thus far so nobly advanced. It is rather for us to be here, dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead, we take increased devotion to that cause for which they gave the last full measure of devotion. That we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain. That this nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom. And that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
It is Memorial Day, and we thought that it would be a good moment to, as we head into the last hour of the evening, to reflect on those we have lost, people that you have known, and through the ages of this country, the short history of this country. If you have someone you would like to honor by calling or texting us, we would love to hear from you. This is your host, Patty Vasquez. It's pretty late. Hannah. I was going to call you Hannah.
Whatever.
What was that? Hannah Stanley.
Hello.
Is in studio with me as well, and yes. We were talking a little bit before we started the show about, well, first, you know, a little bit about all the presidents, and I know that you know when you hear that speech, you were starting to say it. I don't think I know them all by heart.
Well, we were, and probably you were also tested on it. We had to write it out, recite it in school, and man, did I not like that, because one word you'd get it wrong, and you had to start all over.
Yeah.
But now I like that I know those words.
Absolutely.
And I see some of the irony in them. The world will little note or long remember. No, we still remember.
Abraham Lincoln's one of the most written about human beings that's ever lived. I think it's Jesus, then Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, that's interesting.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, we were talking about the Hall of Presidents, and Lincoln still has the primary role, and the Gettysburg Address, of course, plays a huge part in that.
And so many men who died on that, both from the North and the South. We planned on going to a cemetery today for a walk, but things got in the way, so I tried to figure out another way to think about it and reflect. Some people got upset today about hearing the phrase happy Memorial Day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, and the president also wished us all a happy Memorial Day.
Yeah.
And I saw memes that said it, and then other memes, actually a note to WGN Radio's Facebook page upset about it. And I guess, you know, we all take the sentiment differently, and depending on how it affects you and what you take to heart. But do you have family members who had who fought? One of the things is that
17 members of my family have served in the military.
And 17?
17. And we've lost a few, dating back to the Civil War.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's, we have gloves from one of my family members from the Civil War and his Bible. And yeah, so this is something that has been very important. important to my family is military service and the honor that goes along with it and really what they're risking when they do that.
Do you have family members that are able, like, that share the stories of either people they've lost or the battles that, you know, or the kind of service that they did? Because some people are very tight-lipped about that. They're very private.
I had one of each. I had a grandfather whose name is on a plaque in this very building, whose picture, I just took a picture of it, because, of course, as all the listeners know, we are moving very shortly. This might be my last time broadcasting from this building. And he was very proud of his service, and it was very defining to him.
Right.
And who he was his military service during World War II. And then I had another grandfather who also served during World War II, who never spoke of it.
Yeah.
It was not to be talked about. And I had a grandmother who served as well. The grandmother, my grandfather who worked here, she served as well as a Navy nurse.
Really? Mm-hmm. Wow, you really do have a remarkable military history.
Yes.
In your family.
I was born on a base. I was born
where
at
were
an
you
Air
born?
Force base. Wurtsmith Air Force Base.
I did not know that.
In Michigan, yeah, it was a SAC base. It's since closed. But yeah, it goes, there's a lot of pride there.
And what were Memorial Days like for you growing up? Because, you know, I think some people do get confused. Veterans are for living veterans that we honor. Mm-hmm. Memorial Days are soldiers who, or all veterans, we honor them. Armed Forces are people who are currently, Armed Forces Day, currently serving in the military. And Memorial Day are those who gave the ultimate sacrifice. And so what were Memorial Days like when you, do you remember from your family's history and sort of acknowledging that?
You know what? It's not something that was a big celebration. My grandfather, again, right, the one who took a tremendous amount of pride in his service and glory, if you will, he there'd be barbecues, but it wasn't ever like, this is a day we're going to talk about the war. There was a lot of that on any given day. We talked about World War II and some of the stories. I actually, in later years, gave journals to both my grandfather and my grandmother and asked them to write what they remembered. And I was too late. I missed them.
Oh.
I missed where they could have done that for me.
Where you could have had some of those memories.
Some of those stories, some
so they
of the memories.
So to say them, but something they could write down.
Right.
See, and that's something that I do want to talk about. If anyone follows me on Facebook, you can read this essay. But so I'm going to try to do this. Mm-hmm. I might start crying. But this is the best way I could tell you about someone who was very important to me and the experience that she had. I've written an essay called Ampernice, Head and Heart. My parents had me later in life, and sadly, I never had the opportunity to meet any of my grandparents. However, I did have a great aunt, my dad's Aunt Bernice, who happened to be one of the coolest, strongest, and kind-hearted women I have ever known. When I was 6, my older sister was getting married, but she didn't want children at her wedding, including me, and I cried for hours. We were only half-sisters, but I only understood the sister part and wanted so desperately to be at her wedding. My therapist is still getting me over the fact that she didn't ask me to be her flower girl. Only one person managed to rescue me from my despair, and that was my great Aunt Bernice. She volunteered to forego the wedding and babysit me instead. She taught me how to create candy cane decorations out of pipe cleaners and beads. She made me a root beer float, and she let me stay up late to watch something called Saturday Night Live. I was enchanted by this group of adults saying and doing the most outrageous things. She changed my life forever. Great Aunt Bernice became my own personal hero that night, but it would be years before I truly understood that she was heroic in so many more ways than making Christmas decorations and watching late-night television with a distraught 6-year-old. For one thing, she was a breast cancer survivor. After undergoing a double mastectomy in the early 1970s, she worked endless hours as a volunteer for the American Cancer Society. When people were barely inclined to whisper the words, breast cancer, my Great Aunt Bernice strutted proudly down the runway for a fashion show fundraiser. She once told me, "Losing my breasts didn't mean losing my identity. They're my body parts. But I got to keep all the important stuff in my head and heart." Many of us will never know the sorrow of the most tragic stuff she kept in her head and heart. Aunt Bernice had only one child, Edward Leroy Van Dusen. He was my father's closest cousin. Edward enlisted in the army during the Korean War, and my father planned to follow in his footsteps when he was eligible. Instead, my father's ex-girlfriend returned to tell him she was pregnant, and at the age of 17, my father dropped out of high school to drive a cab and support his young family. Life doesn't always turn out the way we hope or plan. Edward was a corporal with Company A, 1st Battalion, 5th Cavalry Regiment, 1st Cavalry Division. On November 2nd, 1950, the 8th Cavalry was surrounded in Intan and suffered heavy losses. The path for retreat was blocked, and Corporal Van Dusen's 5th Cavalry Regiment attempted a breakthrough to provide relief and sustained 350 casualties. This battle was the last known location of my dad's closest cousin, great Aunt Bernice's only son. On December 31st, 1953, he was presumed dead by the United States Army. I never once asked Great Aunt Bernice about Edward. I didn't want to pry. It was such a personal part of her life, even though the family talked about the profound loss when she wasn't around. Everyone talked about how sad it was, all the could have beens of her life. The birthdays, the wedding, the grandchildren. Simply growing older with his family and friends. I wish I had sat down with her just once and asked her to tell me about her son. We should all ask questions about the relatives we never knew. It keeps them with us, and I have a feeling Aunt Bernice was the kind of woman who would have bragged about her son. When she died, I was still too young to quite grasp how much she had endured in her life. The eulogies at her service painted the picture of a woman who suffered tremendous loss, yet always had a smile and kind words. I never knew her to feel sorry for herself. Instead, she wanted the people around her to be happy. I'm sure her pain was rarely far from the surface, but she never made it seem as though she had suffered more than her fair share. I often think about Ed and my great-aunt Bernice when I reflect on all the family in the military that have the shadows of what could have been. Barbecues and parades are wonderful ways to celebrate and share good times together. As we all remember the many lives lost in the relatively short history of this nation, it's with our heads and hearts that we should carry the stuff that's important to us, our families, and our country. Corporal Van Dusen's name is inscribed on the courts of the missing at the Honolulu Memorial. He was awarded the Purple Heart, the Combat Infantryman Badge, the Korean Service Medal, the United Nations Service Medal, the National Defense Service Medal, the Korean Presidential Unit Citation, and the Republic of Korea War Service Medal. More after this on 720 WGN.
Today is the day we put aside to remember fallen heroes and to pray that no heroes will ever have to die for us again. It's a day of thanks for the valor of others, a day to remember the splendor of America, those of her children who rest in this cemetery, and others. It's a day to be with the family and remember. I was thinking this morning that across the country, children and their parents will be going to the town parade, and the young ones will sit on the sidewalks and wave their flags as the band goes by. Later, maybe they'll have a cookout or a day at the beach, and that's good, because today is a day to be with the family and to remember. Arlington, this place of so many memories, is a fitting place for some remembering. So many wonderful men and women rest here. Men and women who led colorful, vivid, and passionate lives. All of these men were different, but they shared this in common. They loved America very much. They stood for something. And we owe them something. Thank all of you, and God bless you, and have a day full of memories.
You're listening to WGN Radio. It is Memorial Day, and we are taking your comments, your thoughts. If there's someone you would like to honor who you've lost, or someone in your family, we are remembering them and honoring them tonight. And Hannah, you said you have a family in your community.
My son Grayson is a fourth grader, and two of his closest friends are little boys, Jack and Evan. They're twin boys, the nicest children. I just really love them. And as I've gotten to know them, I have learned more about their family, their mom, Danielle, and the fact that when they were two, their father, who was only 22 years old himself, Corporal C.J. Boyd, was killed in action. And she was widowed, and they were left without their dad. And today, when I was driving home, I happened to be driving past their house, and the boys were out putting flags in their yard. And my daughter was with me, and she rolls down her window, and she goes, "Hey, Jack and Evan!"
Right, right.
And she was like, "Mom, why are they putting flags out?" And I said, "I'm quite sure it's in honor of their dad. He was really he did what the unthinkable, what none of us would ever have asked. He did voluntarily.
Right.
And so, yeah, I wanted to make sure we honored him and his family and their sacrifice.
And what was his name again?
Corporal C.J. Boyd.
Corporal?
Christopher C.J. Boyd.
Oh, thank you for sharing that with us. I appreciate that. It's not easy. Mm-hmm. Hey, John, how are you doing tonight?
Just fine. How are you?
Very well. What do you want to say?
Well, of course, people who are in their early 20s and younger, they really don't have the understanding of what it means to have freedom be at risk, because they have grown up post 9/11. And even, you know, so really this generation coming up really hasn't had that struggle. Of course, my family is from Chicago, and my uncle on my mother's side saw action in the European theater in WW2. He came back with shell shock, and he never talked about it.
Right.
He would have nightmares where he would throw his wife on the floor, grab a mattress, and throw it on top of her, because in his nightmares, you know, shells were exploding all around him.
Right. It becomes hard to distinguish between the reality and the terror.
Until you're actually there, you have no idea what it's like.
Oh, no doubt.
The phrase is, well, you have to be there. You know, that's true here. No preparing mentally or physically or psychologically or emotionally can really prepare you for it, because, you know, when it comes right down to it, and you just don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And every war throughout time has been different because of the generals, I'll say generals, the leaders, mm-hmm. have used strategies to try to win the battles against their opponents. Hitler used a strategy that was different from Alexander the Great going back in time.
Right.
Vietnam was a totally different experience that the world had never seen before. They were using children. You know, everything is different.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. But I wanted to say that there's a fella here in Logansport that I used to work with. He rejoined the Army to serve, and I just want to thank him and everyone else for their service, because I could not have done what they're able to do. So I'm grateful for them being able to do what I cannot.
Yeah, I agree. I'm thankful for anyone who picks up arms for mm-hmm. a job that most of us can't or won't do.
They run towards the danger.
Right.
Yeah.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Appreciate your call. Thank you so much. From the 773, Memorial Day is a day to remember. God gives, and God surely takes in a second. And that's something to remember. We've been talking about Memorial Day. We'll return to our show in just a moment on 720 WGN.
Stanley here, sort of hosting with Patty Vasquez. We've literally flipped chairs. If you're watching, if you're watching on the WGN radio app, you can see that Patty put me on the board.
This is part of your show.
This is part of my show.
Yeah, run the show.
And Patty's sitting in with me now.
You had something planned for a show that we were double booked on. We can accommodate. We can improvise. We overcome.
We are friends and we flow. That's how we roll. Look at that. I know. Can you write that down, Tom, so we know what we're saying? Because I forgot what I said. Fred Weintraub joining us. And Fred joins us. Patty, you don't even know this. He's in Austria right now. Good morning.
How are you, Hannah?
Oh, Fred, I'm delightful, and I'm always better when I get to talk with you. So thank you so much for taking time to call in.
And I'm better when I get to talk with two hosts of WGN Radio. How cool is that?
It's so great. And Patty and I were discussing the fact that the only thing I don't like about filling in for Patty is that I don't get to see Patty. So this is even better. And I don't think you know Patty, so Patty, Fred, Patty.
Hello, hello. Pleasure to meet you, and thank you for joining us. Hi.
Thanks for having me.
Fred, I think you know, based on the frequency of my posts and my commentary on yours during the royal wedding, I was a little transfixed. I know it's...
I think a lot of people...
Yes.
Go ahead. I think a lot of people were transfixed.
Was it my biggest question during the royal wedding, because they were discussing, of course, how many media was there. I went to the BBC coverage. I didn't even trust the Americans to get this correct. So they gave me far more of the royal nerdiness, as I guess I would say, than that. I didn't care about the celebrities who were there. I cared about like the fifth cousin who was there and why that was scandalous. And
did you have a chart in your house? Did you have like a diagram?
Just in my head.
Okay.
Just in my head. But what's his name? The soccer player. He was sitting next to Winston Churchill's son.
Oh.
David Beckham. Bend it like Beckham. He was sitting next to Winston Churchill. You didn't get that information on ABC.
No.
Only the BBC brought that information. But, Fred, I ask you, was this as big of a deal in Great Britain and the surrounding area as I perceived it to be here in America?
I guess the honest answer is it was probably a bigger deal globally than it was in the UK. That being said, anytime you can get as many people to watch, you know, to watch television and the numbers are just now coming out, and you had millions, you had 18 million Brits watching. So you've got to say, yes, it's a big deal. Is it a big deal more so in America, more so around the world, more so because Meghan is American, soon to be a Brit? She will go and get, now she's been baptized, she will go, she will, after a period of time, get her British passport. The answer is it's a big deal. As you know from talking to me and knowing, as clearly you know as much about the royals as I do, they keep a stiff upper lip. So their degree of excitement, if yours and my degree of excitement was, this is a 12 on a scale of 10, they're going to be very formal about it. And so they're going to show that their degree of excitement was probably around a 6. Although I'll tell you this quick story. So obviously I covered the royal wedding, you know, last weekend from Chicago, which is where I was. When William and Kate got married, I was in London and was doing network stuff for radio stuff for London and for the stations in Chicago. Every guy I talked to said to me, and every cabbie I talked to said to me, I don't care about the royal wedding. I'm not going to watch it. I don't care about Kate. I don't care about William. You go into a pub, every guy would say the exact same thing. When the clock hit 11 a.m. London time at Westminster Abbey, I looked, I did a quick walk around. I looked around. I went to a pub, which was seconds away from where we were working. No one was there. No guy was in that pub. These pubs would have been filled at 11 o'clock at night. So I would say to you that our macho guy image would say, no, we're not going to watch this. We don't care. But we do care. We do care. And people around the world care. And I get asked all the time, why do people care? I would tell you, and you've got to remember, there are two sides to every story. One side is going to tell you they don't like the royals. They think there's a waste. I could go on and tell you about all the charity things that they do and the millions of pounds that they bring in. The non-royalists will come back and say, this is the one head of state in the world that has no real power. But they, you know, in a world where there's so many negative things going on, we need fairy tale things. The world appears to need fairy tale moments. And these fairy tale moments, Harry and Meghan, are two people who in part looks like they fell in love because they believe that they're going to change the world. And if you look and if we have a conversation 5 years from now, 10 years from now, I think you will find two people that alone have started the process of changing in the world. Only imagine what they can do together.
I think I admire her stance on so many things. She's very much the feminist, but isn't, you know, in your face about it. She's just very strong. And I believe that I've been told that there was consideration for Harry to move to Canada while she continued her acting career. And someone spoke to her and said, you can make such a bigger difference in the world with him there in that position. And I admire that that was even a consideration, that she would continue her career. Who would have ever thought that the wife of the prince would be an actress, an American actress?
Absolutely. And I think you will see this slow transformation into what she's going to become. She, you know, she's not going to blog in the same way. She's not going to be able to, she's given up her acting career. But there are so many other things that she's going to be able to do as a global citizen and a member of the royal family, that I think the impact, and I think that while the royal family will tell you that there was no chance that Prince Harry was moving to Canada, you know, we're never going to know that. Because as much as we royal watchers, we royal correspondents think we know, you know, everybody says, my sources to the palace, close to the palace, say this. The one thing you know about the palace is it is very controlled. They get the information. You get the information through press releases. You only get what they want you to really know, and then you put the pieces together. So no one's going to really know if that was really, you know, if she had an opportunity to stay in Canada. I would speculate and say that she wasn't going to stay in Canada, that she was going to move to the UK. And, you know, they had a very short romance in comparison to some of the other royals who haven't worked out, i.e. as well as we hope Meghan and Harry will work out. But they have this bond of unity, this bond of charities that they're involved with that really you would think are going to take them places that and impact the world. They're going to Australia and going to New Zealand as part of the royal tour representing the Queen. One of the telltale signs of was this marriage going to work out was the Queen for this. Before they got married, Meghan was invited to Christmas to celebrate Christmas with the Queen. That's never been done in history.
Never.
That doesn't happen. You and I would have gotten our invitations to go have Christmas dinner with the Queen before Meghan would. But the Queen knows, and you see by how she's acted over the past, how she's changed, how the family's changed over the past 20 years, that she's changing because she wants the monarchy to survive. And she knows that William and Kate and Harry and Meghan are the future of that monarchy. And you saw it by the service at St. George's Chapel. They blew up the rule book of how services are supposed to go.
They had a gospel choir there, Fred. I was shocked. It was amazing. I loved it.
And maybe it represents a Britain, you know, a Great Britain of how it looks now, not how it looked 25, 30 years ago. And when you look at the Queen's face during the BBC broadcast, and I think it's brilliant that you watched only the BBC, because I only watched the BBC. You saw a very stoic Queen. You never really saw any emotion. But don't be fooled. Underneath that showing of no emotion, you see a 92-year-old woman who is smart as they come. She knew. It's not like she was surprised by anything. It's not like she didn't see pieces of the sermon beforehand. It's not like she didn't give Meghan the opportunity to plan with Harry the service they wanted. So maybe it made the royals and other people within the royal family a bit uncomfortable, and maybe that's not bad. Maybe that's not bad. And clearly, if the Queen has approved it, if the Queen can change, so can the rest of the world. So you're looking at a Britain that is much different than the Britain that we've seen in the past. You're looking at a Britain that so much more represents Meghan. And I think you're going to find great things are going to happen.
All right, Fred, I'm excited. I have so many more questions. I would love for you to stay with us through the break. From Austria, Fred Weintraub, we are talking about Meghan. I am going to ask a question just to prepare about Wallace and Windsor and the correlation with what we're seeing now with Harry and Meghan. Hannah Stanley, at the moment hosting for Patty Vasquez, who is sitting to my right, your left, as you look at your radio. More on WGN right after this.
Oh,
Hannah Stanley. I think it's so weird to say that I'm sitting here at WGN. Patty Vasquez. It is the Patty Vasquez Show. It's Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
With Hannah Stanley.
With Hannah Stanley.
And Hannah Stanley. Sure which is the appropriate.
I don't know.
It's all good.
It doesn't matter. And
you're running this because the only thing I know about the Royals is from what I've watched on The Crown. That's all I got.
Which is not bad, a bad place to start. Fred Weintraub, I'm so excited that he's on the phone. I can't even say his name right. Fred Weintraub, thank you so much for joining us and sticking around with us to help. I don't even know what it is. I'm such a nerd about the Royals. And Fred, thank you. You know, you get me. You totally get me.
I do. And I'm thrilled to be on with both of you guys.
Thank you so much. Now, before we went to the break, I was talking about Wallace and Windsor. So if people are not familiar with this, one, the Windsor knot is because of Windsor is who I'm referring to. Wallace was an American who he fell in love with and had to step away from being king because he was in love and wanted to marry her. I believe also a divorcee. Sounds familiar. But he was next in line for the throne. Harry is now sixth in line, and that's so far. If Kate and William have any more children, that's going to continue to grow. Is that why it's not a big deal now that he married an American divorcee or divorcee?
Well, it's not a big deal. It might have been a big deal 30 years ago if there were Harry and Meghan, because the Queen was of the belief, the church was of the belief that you don't marry into the royal family if you've been divorced. But they've learned from experience. Probably one of the most excruciating experiences for Queen Elizabeth was the abdication of Edward because he loved this American woman. And what happened, as you well know, when they first met in 1931, and I think he abdicated in like 1937. And what happened at that point is Queen Elizabeth's father, King George VI, he became king at that point. There was a little thing called the World War that happened during those years. And I think Queen Elizabeth, in part, would say the pressure of being king, probably mixed with everybody in the world smoking cigarettes at that time, killed her father, put her in line to the throne. She always wanted to be just a country woman who lived at Windsor, which is basically her weekend country estate that she loves the most, where if she had her way in the world, she wouldn't have wanted to be queen. She would have wanted to ride horses and spend quiet weekends in the what I would call the suburbs of the UK. Mm-hmm. But the world has changed, and And so you have a biracial woman in Meghan, who the Queen, on I believe October of 2017, she had this very private secret tea where one afternoon Harry and Meghan drove up to Buckingham Palace in a blackened out car. And the story is that they got so close to the private gate of the palace that even some of the senior members of the Queen's staff did not know that they were coming into Buckingham Palace. And they were coming in because they were having this private tea with the Queen, because Harry at that point needed, because he was sixth in line to the throne, he needed to ask the Queen permission to marry Meghan. And really, the Queen at 92, being as smart as she is, had met Meghan on other occasions, but it was her final sign-off. And just as many people in politics, many people in corporate America, and many people in life, in the end, we all go with what does our gut tell us to do? And you got to think, if that key didn't go right, that there never would have been the marriage of Meghan and Harry. And so it's a different world. And so being a different world, being a monarchy that needs to grow, I think the Queen knew that she had to stop with the rules that made no sense. They made sense 30, 40, maybe 50 years ago, and move into the future. And you've seen her in her reign move into the future with lots of different things.
Well, those rules one, brought them Diana into their worlds because Charles was not allowed to marry his first love until much later, because she was in fact divorced. But I love the fact that it has gotten publicity that the dogs loved Meghan. That, and Harry has said, for 33 years, I've been barked at every time I've walked in the room, and this one walks in nothing.
He would get bitten. He would get bitten by the corgis every time. Can you imagine 33 years? He's gone into the palace to visit his grandmother. And those I'm not going to say, although I'm going to say it, those stinking little dogs go up to him and nip him. All of a sudden, Meghan goes in, who's a dog lover, and I think he has two dogs, one who stayed in America, one who came over with her to the U.K.
And was in the car with the Queen the other day. Yes, the beagle.
And the dogs cuddled up to Meghan. You know, you got to think the Queen, who is the lover of the dog, said, I'll get rid of Harry, but I'm going to keep Meghan.
Oh, if my son came to me and my dog curled up on the girlfriend's lap, I'd be like, you're in. It's done. Finished. Oh, Fred, we are running, of course, out of time, which is devastating to me because I wanted to talk about the coat of arms. I have so many other questions for you. Please, my friend, enjoy Austria. Thank you for the lovely pictures.
Thank you for having me, both you guys, for both of you guys on the show.
I bogarted
the one thing that you want to watch out. Go ahead.
No, you go. Well, watch out for what?
The one thing you want to watch out for is the next big news you're going to see is when Meghan gets pregnant.
I figured. That's going to be a little bit of time, though. They've got things they want to do. They've
Unless that's why the dress wasn't so fitted.
Ooh.
I'm sorry.
Snap.
Oh, what? That's all I got.
I think it might be faster than you think, but that'll be talk for another conversation.
All righty.
Tease.
All right. Fred Weintraub, thank you so much for being the official WGN Royal Correspondent.
Talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks so much. Bye. Hannah Stanley tonight for the next minute and a half running the board.
We have a singer coming in. There's nothing. It's all good.
I'm pretty late with Patty Vasquez. Hey, look, that's Patty Vasquez.
There's Hannah Stanley.
I'm Hannah Stanley. More right after this.
And we'll never be royal.
In case our friends on the text screen don't think that we're following along with what they're saying, by the way, 708, now, it's just a quick conversation. No reason to get all snippy. And by the way, yes, so that was for the 312 who asked for the royals. We did not miss an opportunity. Boom, there it was. I enjoy watching The Crown.
Yeah.
I love the storytelling. The only thing I would ever ask him, what do you think, actually, since you do know more mm-hmm. than I do, yeah. how much do you think, does that series have any influence over Queen Elizabeth? Do you think that she takes some of that to heart, sort of the history of it? I heard she gave a nod to the series in her Christmas speech.
Yeah. One, her Christmas speech, if you've never paid attention to it, it's so delightful every year. It's so fun.
Well, I loved watching it in the, I had no idea yes. about the history of it.
Oh, it's just the cutest thing. I really, really like her very much. And, you know, her and her cute little clutch purse. And I think she's just a precious little grandma who happens to be a queen. It's interesting because she is so tight-lipped, because she is so private. I have no idea what she would think
about it. Yeah. It's just curious.
I know Kate was at the set for Downton Abbey.
Oh, really?
They were fans. Yes. But I don't remember if William was there. But so I know that there's support of at least the British arts, but right. I don't know.
Do you watch Call the Midwife?
No,
that's brutal.
Yet.
I mean, it's good. It's really good, but it's a baby coming out of, you know. Every single episode.
It happens.
Yeah.
That's what they do.
So here from 574, tabloids say she's already preggers. That's our friend John who called earlier.
Well.
So, telling you.
I don't know.
Although the second dress was form-fitting, I think, wasn't
it? The second dress was devastating.
It was gorgeous.
Stella McCartney.
Mm-hmm.
Her dad's the knight of the British Royal Empire. Just saying. Sir Paul McCartney.
Sir
Paul McCartney. No, wise choices by her yes. on her choice. I mean, really could have, anybody would have taken that commission, but that Stella McCartney was.
Yeah. Good stuff. Just,
and he was suave in their little James Bond car owned by his dad.
And for everyone who doesn't know, I didn't watch any of it. I didn't see anything.
Yeah. You didn't see any of it.
All right, let's go. Shall we go to
I suppose I should do friends? This. All right, good. You can win a 2018 Chevy Silverado. For details, listen to Steve Cochran weekday mornings at 7:20 on 720 WGN Chicago. If you're a smart speaker user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. The news is sponsored by Arkadek. It's, what, 12-ish? Here's Roger Badish.
A few clouds in the sky, 74 degrees at O'Hare. Chicago Fire Department Marine Unit diver Juan Bucio was pronounced dead after he was pulled from Lake Michigan late last night while his dive team was searching for a 28-year-old who'd fallen off a boat. Fire Department spokesperson addressing the media.
Firefighter Bucio joined the Chicago Fire Department in 2003 and joined the dive team in 2007. He survived by...
Joining us pretty late on the Patty V Show. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, hosting with Hannah Stanley tonight. And Hannah, so far we've covered a lot of ground already. And yes.
All over the place.
And I'm kind of excited because this is kind of a surprise for my mom.
I'm excited about this too.
Because my mom came home a few months ago. She said, Patricia, I have someone you must have on your show.
I only call you that when I'm Patricia? Mad at you.
No. Okay, it's a whole thing about growing up. She can't say Patty. I mean, she can. It's just unfortunate the way it's. No. But it's Patty, like when you go to the bathroom.
Yes.
Patty. Well, Patty. Patty is Spanish. Patty is Spanish, Antonio. I haven't introduced you yet, but I must let people know that one of Chicago's quickest rising stars is in studio with us. He's very young. We're fine with that. To be so talented and young.
And he's precious and adorable and handsome.
All of that. Antonio Duca. Am I saying your name right?
Yes, that's right.
I don't want to get anything wrong because my mom, you got his name wrong.
You got it wrong.
She saw you perform at an event, and I know that you perform all over the city. People have seen you on the series Empire, dazzling people with your voice, as my mom was absolutely speechless. She could not stop talking about you. So tell us, where did you grow up?
You flatter me. I grew up, well, kind of all over the place, in a suburb called Park Ridge and a suburb called Glenview.
We're familiar.
Old Irving Park in Chicago, right? With my mother. But right now I'm living in Northbrook with my grandfather, who is with me tonight, Frank Fernandez.
Hey, Grandpa.
Yeah.
This is great. I don't know if he likes that. I don't know if he likes Grandpa Frank.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Hey, Frank. I'll call him Frank.
Yeah, I always say he's my maternal grandfather. If you can't tell, just check the hairline. Mine's going there, too. So,
Yeah. But he's handsome. He's handsome like you. You're good.
He's a dapper man. Yes, dashing.
Yeah. Don't tell my son that that's the way it works. Because, I know. It's going to go that way. So when did you start singing?
Man, I started singing probably around 5 or 6 years old.
Uh-huh.
I discovered I loved music around that age as well. I found an old Sinatra CD in his basement when he was cleaning up. And this is where we lived in Harwood Heights, right? Yeah. And then we went to a restaurant called Biagio's, and they have open mic, and they had a keyboard player. Someone got me up there to sing, open my mouth. People liked it. It was received well. So I'm just like, hey. So
at 5 or 6 years old, you did an open mic?
Yeah, I was singing? That little kid on the bar. Yeah.
This is amazing.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. And I always say in my gigs, as a little quip, I always say, you know, it was hard as a kid before puberty trying to sing like a chain smoker.
No kidding. With a whiskey in his hand.
I know.
Did you ever go up there with like a glass of orange juice?
Yeah,
you know?
That's the novelty. So... Yeah, I've done that.
Or apple juice. I think that would be more whiskey-like. Yes.
Close. Yeah. Ginger ale. Sure. Ginger ale,
something. Yep. Something to do it.
Yeah.
So did you study singing, or have you always kind of by ear been able to pick up and run on your own?
Yeah, for the first several years, it was by ear. My like knowledge of music theory is pretty rudimentary. Like if you give me like a staff, like, you know, I can pick out the note. Just give me some time. But anytime I did take any form of lessons, it was more of a coaching in high school. I was doing the variety show, and so the choir director Marty Servatka, great man, referred me to another vocalist named Bill Prokopov. And with him, he kind of just like, you know, for the number I was doing for the variety show, he would just kind of like, you know, go over it with me. But besides that, to get to the crux of your question, it's been by ear, and I'm learning as I go, and I take tips, and I'm constantly learning. So it's just an experience.
And you are now in college. What are you studying?
Contrary to popular expectation, I'm not studying music. I'm actually a psychology major. I am minoring in business and creative writing.
Yes, all that's good.
All that's good, right?
For an artist, all of that is good.
That's the net to fall
business,
on.
Business, business, business.
Well, not only that, it's not even just, right, Hannah, it's not just a net to fall on. If you do, you know, pursue or decide to, you know, chase your dreams, having, you know, this is something that performers don't get, is having some business sense is important.
Yeah.
Psychology is important, because understanding your audience, kind of having patience with them, getting how the brain works and how music impacts
people.
True.
Yeah.
All those, you're doing all the right things.
No. Now, yeah. Business... hundreds and thousands of performers would be like, God, I wish I had a business background. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. I wish I had a business background. my mom wishes I had. That's why now I know why she likes you so much.
Well, it must be raw talent, because you've done very well for yourself so far. Maddie, so.
I'm hanging in there. I want to know how we can let people find out where you're performing and how they can hire you. You're home all summer between semesters.
Yeah, I got out May 9th, and I'll be back in school mid-August.
Mm-hmm.
So... in that interim, like, we just, it's word of mouth. We have business cards with emails and phone numbers. Facebook, there's a page there you can follow. We post all the events. I'm working on a website, so that should be out this summer. And yeah.
Facebook's where people are doing a lot of their gigs now.
Promotion.
Yeah. Right, I feel so. You're and fine. I got a Twitter, too. So, mm-hmm. you know, for the 40 followers I have right now,
well, let's work on that.
Out.
Yeah. Follow him. What's your handle?
Follow me. So I'm at an Allegory Story.
An allegory story.
Allegory story.
Aww, yeah. I love that. All right, let me allow my phone to do a Facebook Live video so that we can do this live and people can follow on my Facebook
page.
I'm Patty Vasquez. You can see Antonio Duca performing mm-hmm. live in the studio. When we come back after, we're going to talk a little bit more, because I want to find out more about you and talk about being on TV and with all of those things. You are listening pretty late, and we are thrilled to welcome in studio Antonio Duca. Here he is. What are you singing for us, by the way?
Embraceable You.
That's going to be awkward. He's literally young enough to be my son. So, I mean, if I had a kid when I was 12, you know what I'm saying? Here is Antonio Duca with Embraceable You.
Hello, everyone.
Embrace me, my sweet embraceable you. Embrace me, my irreplaceable you. Just one look at you, my heart grew tipsy in me. You and you alone bring out the gypsy in me. I love all the many charms about you. Above all, I want my arms about you. Don't you be a naughty baby. Come to Papa, come to Papa, do. My sweet embraceable you. The many charms about you. Above all, I want my arms about you. So don't you be a naughty baby. Come to Papa, do. My sweet, embraceable you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wow, that's Antonio Duca.
Yes.
We're getting it from the 30301. Antonio has a beautiful voice.
That is an understatement.
Let's talk a little more. When we come back with Antonio Duca, follow him on Facebook. His Twitter handle is?
An Allegory Story.
An Allegory Story. More with him when we come back. And Hannah Stanley is co-hosting tonight. More in a moment on 720 WGN. People always ask me, how do I get on your show? Well, you got to go through my mom, Hannah Stanley. That's how you get on my show.
That's how I'm here.
I'm just saying. She saw a young man performing at an event. His name is Antonio Duca, and he's in studio with us. He just sang a lovely rendition of Embraceable You. Joining me in studio is also Paul Farvar. Hannah Stanley is hosting tonight. I just have to say, you're hosting too.
Sitting in with. I'm sitting in.
You're co-hosting.
I'm co-hosting.
Okay, I like that. Paul, can you please hire Antonio for a bunch of gigs? Let me turn your mic on. Would you like that?
Yeah, that would be good. Okay, I would love to if I had the opportunity. I will. I heard the voice. It was amazing.
Thank you so much.
Super cool.
No pressure.
But
yeah,
on a side note, if you need a guitarist or a djembe player.
I'm not hearing many djembe players on a Frank Sinatra tunes.
Well, you know what? There's always a first. You know, people made jokes about rock and hip-hop combining, and then look what happened.
Absolutely. Always looking for good musicians. Yeah.
There you go.
There you go. He's open to it. Now, you write some of your own music, too.
I have written some originals. One, I was fortunate enough to have arranged for my high school's orchestra, and I did that for the variety show my senior year. And it was, you know, one of your typical sappy, you know, love songs, all emo and whatnot, but it was such an experience.
Did you say all emo and whatnot?
All emo and whatnot. Yeah.
The tortured teenagers. But here's the thing, is that, like, you know, I always joke about that. We have a singer-songwriter named Tess Considine, who I've known since she was 15 years old, coming on the show. She's now in Nashville going to school. And, you know, I used to tease her about it. But if you remember when we were in high school, like, you know, being in love or being rejected was like the end of the world. Yeah. So I don't know why we make fun of teenagers.
There's so much angst.
Oh, gosh.
It's just It
feels like forever.
That's the introduction to it, because you never know anything like it before you hit it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like, I'm going to die.
Yeah.
You know, it feels permanent. Everything feels permanent.
And sometimes it is.
Sometimes, yeah.
And then 20 years later, you start a podcast called Singles Only.
Yeah.
And,
try to work out your issues.
Single forever. Yeah. Yeah. So that's your future.
It's not your future. He's getting his. By the way, Paul, before I forget, my mom wants me to go back to law school, and I blame you for that, just so you know.
Also something that can happen to you as well.
Exactly.
You have so much ahead of you.
You can start all over. Are there gigs that you like doing? I mean, you know, there's one thing to like keep getting work, but is there something that you enjoy? Like, you know, I'm guessing like you do weddings, senior homes, because they love that music.
I mean, that's their era, right?
You're right.
And both of those, the weddings and senior homes, they're both very rewarding. I actually made a Facebook post recently, and I made this long post saying how when I first started it, you know, it was all about, you know, doing the music, just, you know, getting these gigs, and then you start talking to these people, and especially at the retirement homes, and it's really touching. And you know, I remember I closed the show with My Way. And this couple, who they're still married, they're in this home together, and they lost their son. He died in an accident, I believe, and that's the one they played at a funeral, and they were in tears. And like that's a really powerful moment that I'm fortunate to experience, because I feel like a lot of I think everyone who's around this age should get a little dose of that to appreciate, you know, people who have been there. I mean, look at this old man to my left over here.
Grandpa Frank, look at him.
I was like, Paul? Okay.
I am leaving now. That's my cue.
Standing to my left. But
I was like, come on, buddy. We were about to join a band and revolutionize music, and then you call me an old man.
When did you start gigging? Were you like 13, 12? How old was Grandpa Frank getting you out there on the boards?
Professionally, it was around 14.
Yeah.
We were taking gigs at, it started off with restaurants because, you know, I was, you know, the background music and stuff. And when people, you know, noticed me, they started giving me more job opportunities. And then I started working at, well, not working. I would guest appear at a place called Fitzgerald's in Berwyn.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Great venue.
And he took me there one night. And, you know, I would say we're a good dynamic duo because I'm a little shy sometimes. I love to perform, but he's the brash, you know, he's meant to be the promoter. And he looked at me and he said, well, some slurs in Spanish that I won't, you know, little cuss words. And, you know, that's how we communicate. But he looked at the big band that was playing. It was a John Brunette Big Band Orchestra. And he was a radio host. And he had this wonderful band that I never thought I'd get the opportunity to play with a band because wanted to hire him for a small venue or a gig, you know, that's money and space that I won't usually have. And he told me that you will be singing with this band, I promise you. And I said, you're insane. And so, lo and behold, you know, in a couple months, he talked to the band leader and he gave me a shot. And I went up there and people liked it and he had me back every month after.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
See?
And it's been 2 years now that I've been going to that band and they've changed leaders and, you know, and that's also great because you get those relationships with those musicians that you're going to need further down the line.
Absolutely.
And yeah, it's been so much fun. And because of Mr. Burnett, he actually got me the contact with a man named Rich Daniels, and that's how subsequently ended up on Empire.
Yeah, how did you like being on Empire?
That was everything that happened to me, I was shocked by it.
Right?
I'm just like, you know, and when we went to the casting agency, we went downtown.
And she's tough.
Yeah, I mean,
Claire
I
Simon's
heard these
tough.
Things after, and I'm glad
yeah.
I heard them after.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Because I would have been, like, freaking out.
Yeah.
So I walked
Took me 20
there.
Years to get back in with her, just so
really?
You know. My first audition, she goes, you don't know how to read. And
oh, yeah.
And then I got on Chicago Med three times, but
hey,
or Fire,
see?
Or something like that. But mm-hmm. you got to keep showing up. So you didn't know,
right.
which I love that.
Yeah,
because
yeah,
she's
like,
terrifying.
I come in, and then, like, there's a bunch of these seasoned, you know, classically trained actors and vocalists, and I'm sitting down, and I had, like, my pocket watch and a chain. I thought it was cool, like, when I was 16. I had,
it
like,
is cool.
Chain coming out, right?
What's wrong with having a pocket? I love that.
You know, see, I kind of thought it was neat, so I was sitting there, and then everyone was going in, like, you know, like, dead men walking, just going in there.
Yes.
And then I didn't even have my proper headshot. Like, that's how
yeah.
really unprepared I was. And I went in there, and they gave me the script. It was, they were casting, they were looking for a part to play, it was going to be a guy at a nightclub who sings there, and he's going to introduce a future star on the show. It was Jamila Vasquez, I believe it, I don't want to butcher her name. Fantastic on that show. And so I went in there, and so they asked me to sing a song. I remember I sang The Very Thought of You.
Oh.
And then I ran the lines. And then I grew up with him, so I got the Latino accent down. And then they said, thank you. And then that was it. And then 2 hours later, we're on the way back home. We got a call in the car. And it was supposed to be, you know, directed towards my grandfather. That was the number that they had. And then he had it on, like, Bluetooth speaker. And then, like, they said, okay, so we want him back. And so I'm just like, ee! And then he's just like, okay. Nice.
Right. Cool. Right.
We'll give you a call. And so I'm
just, he's all,
oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he's all
playing all cool,
yeah.
aloof. Sure.
Yeah. And so then we went back there, and it was such an experience. There was a set downtown. It was like a bar restaurant. He's actually an extra in the clip
sure.
that I was in. He's sitting at the bar. And I went to CineSpace and I recorded their Sunny Side of the Street. And then they used that for the clip, season 2, episode 4.
Isn't that nice to have?
Yeah.
And also, and when we, after, before you go, I'll talk to you about some, do you have your headshots yet?
Yeah, we actually have
okay.
some stuff I can,
you all know, right,
send
I was gonna
to
say,
you later.
But yeah, well, not for me, for the agents. I want you to be
you.
Listed with everybody. I know people. I know a couple people. Like, there's some really good agents.
Yeah, sorry, right, so yeah. I got him. You know.
He's got a guy. Well, everyone go to Antonio Duca's Facebook page. You can follow him on Twitter at My Allegory Story.
An allegory story.
And yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you. Ooh. Was that me or you?
Yeah,
oh,
that's
that was,
you.
That was me, apparently.
You're fancy.
Oh, my phone wants me to go to follow you right now. I shall go to there. Antonio, I can see why my mom fell in love with you. And so not many people impress my mom. Ask Hannah. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you've met my
the
mom.
The woman has met me 32 times and goes, nice to meet you. Every time.
Paul, have you met
my mom? But she still wants me to design your bathroom, which
yes.
I love about her.
Yes, she does. Yeah. Paul, have you met my mom?
I met her at the New Year's Eve party.
Briefly. Oh, that's right. Oh, she was like holding court.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. That's what we could do next year, maybe for the New Year's Eve show. We could probably get booked for something that pays better than I can pay.
No.
we'll see what happens. Antonio, it was a pleasure to meet you.
Likewise. Thank you.
And again, if you have events coming up over the summer, you need a singer. As you heard, he has a dazzling voice. Mm-hmm. And I wish you all the very best and look forward to seeing you back before you go back to school for the fall.
I would love that.
Please do.
Privilege. Thank you.
All right. And like I said, two songs next time.
Two, three. Yeah.
Thank you. We're going to take a selfie. More after this on 720 WGN. This is an alert for all listeners that like submitting segments to Nick D for his Friday morning show, Out of Context. And right now this is actually a Nick D Spies segment as well, because I just mentioned
Nick D's
so.
Here. I saw
and he walked right in and he waved and he's getting ready for his show. We were talking off the air. That whole segment off the air could have been on the Nick D's Out of Context. Yes. There's a for people who aren't familiar on Facebook, Hannah Stanley and I were talking about this a little bit. Hannah Stanley is co-hosting tonight.
Hi, Patty.
Hello.
Hi.
And joining us in studio of comedian Mona Abermishan and comedian Paul Farvar.
Hello.
And something happened on my Facebook page because...
Something's always happening.
Something's always happening. This is what happened. So there is a function on Facebook where you can poke someone.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never poked anyone. I've been poked and never poked back. I think it's a weird function. And I'll get more into that in a moment. But the reason it came up is because, and this is something that I realize is more of a passive aggressive thing on my part. So I acknowledge that. There is a former comedy club owner named Bill Brady who has a Facebook page, that we're Facebook friends. We've also been friendly professionally. We've always had great conversations. I don't agree with him on not only the way he ran. There were things that he had rules at his comedy club that you couldn't say the F word, right? But everyone could do really sexually explicit material on stage. For example, he would have bachelorettes come on stage. He would kind of humiliate them and have them do fellatio shots. I can't say the actual shot, but I'm going to use the term. And it was sort of icky to me. So I kind of have that baggage as part of this. So that's part of it.
All right, then full disclosure.
Right. So, and then a very nasty fight erupted, and so often erupts on his page between him and another comedian named Rob Hines. This is all public stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, I kind of stepped into it to a post that I thought had gotten kind of ugly and was kind of trying to get, and I shouldn't have. But after I stepped in, Bill Brady poked me.
I love how many disclosures there are.
I know, but I think that it's important because...
Backstory.
Because I think it's more to why I decided to screenshot the fact that Bill Brady poked me, and I just thought it was... And I think every time someone pokes me, it's icky, but for some reason, this one irked me, and I decided to screenshot it and blast him on Facebook. Esmeralda saw this happening in real time, and, I put, for the record, Bill, it's never not creepy when dudes do this. And I posit that when someone pokes you, they're saying they want to stick a part of themselves into your pits. So that's just to be full disclosure, Paul, I believe. So, Paul, you were surprised that this is an issue on Facebook.
No. I definitely see the creepiness of poke. I actually have a joke about poking that's a big part of my joke, and I don't do it in certain settings. Like, older people don't know what it is.
Right.
And I was in Reno this last week, so I cut it out. But when you saw, I was in Reno when I saw your comments, I was like, oh, I love poking. But I didn't read your whole backstory.
And all the women
saying,
yes,
so I'm the guy
yes,
who's
creepy.
Defending it. Right.
Right.
But I mean, I have one of my friends and I poke each other. And right now it's at 280 back and forth.
Okay, so it's like a mutual poking.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah. When I log on to my Facebook, it often says, like, suggestions to poke. On one computer, it's the first thing that, and like to get the screen off or like to move it up, I just go through the list and do it. It's like, all over people, but I don't do it to people I don't know.
You are
I
like think, a Facebook dream. Facebook yeah. is like, let's yes. see if this algorithm works with Paul.
And full disclosure, I have stock in Facebook, so I okay. do want them to succeed. So I do defend yeah. the poke. I
That's
do.
Why? Yes.
I do defend the poke, but yeah, like I think it's creepy if you don't know someone well enough to do it. But like I'll like
well, poke. Someone you know professionally, and I've only known right. them as like somebody who was in a position of as a superior.
Yeah,
somebody who like I've always yeah, as like somebody who sees themselves as this sort of like
yeah.
Like I found out last night that this comic would also go on stage after young comics were done and like basically dissect their sets on stage, and I already put the thing on blast like mm-hmm. the day before, and I was just like, so here's somebody who can dish it out, so when I you know decide to like blast him on social media, and it's just
for the poking
right, and not for everything else, not because the poking is weird. Yes.
Yeah.
If I'm standing next to you, Patty,
yes,
and you don't realize I'm there,
right?
I walk up and go, Patty. I don't poke you with my finger,
right,
to say hello,
right?
That's why I find it peculiar.
Send me a Paul, message, say hey.
I haven't seen you in a while. Yeah. You yeah. did not walk over and poke me in the shoulder. That was not a thing that happened.
If right. it was a comedy club, I would, because you're not allowed to talk. So you poke the person. You're like, hey, what's up?
Okay. My husband pokes me all the time.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounded terrible. But I mean, like, we'll go. Be sitting on the couch talking to each other. Like, I'll be like busy doing something, or he's watching TV. He's like, hey, did you see that? And he'll
yeah.
poke me. And I'm like, I mean, just sitting right here. Stop poking me.
The
I text my husband next to me. Can you pay
That's
attention
fantastic.
To this now? Yeah.
The thing I liked about your blast about poking is you listed a whole bunch of people that had poked you, and they all had to defend themselves.
Yes.
Like, oh, yeah. That made me. I was in my hotel room just cracking up. I was like, oh, these poor guys. Like, maybe they're not so poor guys, but it was
Bill
awesome.
Wasn't the only one I blasted. There was a whole list of guys.
Yeah.
I have 1,000 in my hopper of mm-hmm. pokes.
1,000? Wow.
At least 1,000 pokes.
I will, a friend of mine, a female, she and I will get into poke fights where yeah. we like poke each other as often as we can in like 5 minutes.
Right.
And then we're like, okay, that's exhausting.
Right. I've never.
I have.
That's one I have. It's at like 200 something.
But we do it like in a limited time. It's just like crunch time, just like poke, 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 poke. And then we're like, okay, I'm tired. And then I go to bed. Like it's a workout for me.
And another level of the poking is if you poke and they don't respond, I screenshot it and then text them and say, hey, you didn't respond to my poke.
Oh, I love that.
All right. The people who poke me on Facebook are not people who could text me. They don't have my number.
Oh, right.
If you don't have my number,
you shouldn't
be poking me on Facebook.
So the rule is if you have the cell phone number, you can poke.
No, then you text me and go, hey,
professional.
I'm quote unquote poking you.
Now, Paul, you were saying that you do it in a friendly way, but we're friends and you've never poked me.
Yeah. Well, you've never been suggested.
That's fair. That's fair.
I don't like,
you know,
I don't
why?
Go out of my way.
Because I will screenshot it
I'm
and blast
checking
you
right now
That's
to see
why.
If he's poked
I poked
me.
You after you
right
did.
Afterwards, yes.
Yeah, I don't know why it's never suggested you. It always suggests weird. There's certain ones that, like, I'm not going to, like, another lawyer that I worked with. I'm like, okay, that's weird.
And that would be unprofessional.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. But if it's someone I know, like other comedians or something, I'm like, yeah, fuck it.
Do you, whoa! I got it. Did you get it? We both did it.
Did we double dump?
Yeah, we
double
dump.
Actually, I didn't say the full.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, you did.
That's
yeah,
enough.
We did.
That's enough.
That's a first for me.
It really is. Yo, wow. Tom's throwing you out of the game. Well, you know, let's go to Tom.
That's the first in all my life that I've ever done that here. Anyway. But yeah, I will go along with it.
Do you ever do it in a flirtatious way?
I'm mm-hmm. trying to think back if I have. I don't think I have. Probably, yeah, like to like exes or something. I don't know. Maybe I did.
See, that's what I'm saying. Now, Tom, do you ever poke anybody on Facebook?
On Facebook, no.
Okay.
In real life.
In real life.
And even if he had, he would not talk about it now.
No, what I'm do a, you? I'm a poker. You
don't
know?
You think? Don't you think that that poking is flirtatious and or alluding to wanting to do something else?
Yes and no, but it's so outdated now. Like nobody under the age of like 30 really pokes anymore.
That's a good point as well. Mona, when you see someone poked you, this guy, right?
Well, typically, okay, I understand the whole having an old school poke war. I poked, I've been poking a guy since I started Facebook back in 2007. we've invoking each other. It's like, man, it's kind of like saying, you're on the radar, I'm on the radar, great. Mm-hmm. Other than that, unless the only people I get poked by now is usually spam, which is like some goofy prince from Nigeria that's also trying to get me, or some, hey, I am is your relative from Palestine. I am just finding the Facebook, and the first thing I do is poke. Like, no, dude, you're my uncle. You don't want to poke me. You don't know what that means.
Right. Now,
but if I want to poke someone, I don't poke them. I go and I like all their pictures.
See?
That's another good move,
they
too.
They ever posted, ever. I will scroll. You know what I'll even do? Especially on Instagram. I will scroll, scroll, scroll. Boom. I'll find a random picture and I'll like that. That's the Instagram equivalent of poking.
So it's like a sort of a under the radar. But it's not under the radar if you're liking photos from the very beginning of their Instagram account, right? I mean, that's kind of like, I've been checking you out. And it's weird when you get those. That's an interesting element to this.
Or like all of them. I do that on Instagram, too.
That's a version of poking. Hey, remember that one time you posted this horrible picture of you eating sushi in like 2011? The sushi joint's not even around anymore.
If you could all go back and like our shows. Hannah, wouldn't you like people to go back and retroactively like our shows from 2014?
I would, but then it would... and you're the same way. We would sit and like torment ourselves over why did that become popular all of a sudden?
Well, have you ever done this? Like just like figuring out who this person is and scrolling through their past and accidentally like something?
Yeah.
And you can't unlike it because it will say that there was... they already get the alert that there was activity. They reacted to your post.
No, I unlike it.
Paul would take a screenshot saying, just kidding, and then text it to them. Undo that, like.
I don't know if you can undo pokes, right? Or can you undo them?
I don't know. I can't even find pokes right now. I'm trying to find them.
Right.
Patty's bragging about how many she's got in her hopper. Now I gotta look.
I got all the pokes. More after this on 720 WTN. I've been really trying, baby. Trying to hold back this feeling for so long. And if you like I feel, come on. Making it sound like it's getting all steamy in here. Tom,
there's
producer
a lot of
Tom
going
Hush.
So much poking.
Let's
so
get
much
it
poking.
Off. The poking.
Yes.
Get the poking off of my Facebook. Screen, off of Facebook.
Well, the idea of that, right, there is also the social etiquette of being on Facebook. So the other issue then is when I did put somebody on blast for poking me, somebody who was previously my professional superior, who wasn't, you know, who could book me, who could have an effect on my career by having work, because when you're a young comic, and the kinds of things that I witnessed at that club were still kind of stay with you, you know, like the women in comedy and our role. It has a lot to do with why I think I lashed out. And I agree. I think it was sophomoric and I enjoyed doing it. What does Anne Lamott say, you know, about your haters? If they didn't want to talk. Wait, hold on a second. Let me get the quote right before I screw it up. It's on my Facebook page, because right after somebody got mad at me for publicly calling out, or I guess they said I was shaming him. Here, you own everything that happened to you. Tell your stories. If people wanted you to write warmly about them, they should have behaved better.
Word.
I love her.
So Anne Lamott says that, and I guess that's part of it. I should check myself when I want to. I guess, you know, people aren't necessarily in the public eye, but people who listen to the show know that I do this. It is not necessarily.
They might not listen.
What, the like Tom, my ex-boyfriend from college? Let's call him Tom Daniels.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's his name.
I'm friending Anne Lamont.
Exactly. What was that, Mona?
I'm friending Anne Lamont. I like her.
Oh, she's fantastic.
She's delightful.
Outstanding writer. But there is this idea, too, of, you know, some people have very public battles on Facebook. Do you ever see these folks that, like, get into arguments, not just politically, but personally with each other, or air their dirty laundry out? And that's a little bit kind of what I did, I think. It was sort of like, I don't like what you used to do, and this was kind of gross, and so I'm going to make fun of you for it. It was a little bit of that.
Why do you say sophomoric? Why?
Oh, because one of his friends called me juvenile.
Oh, that's why. Oh.
I'm just throwing that out there as the other side of the argument.
Yeah, yeah.
That maybe Bill didn't know what the etiquette was, or
that
I could have had the point of Bill's friend was I could have had a private conversation with him rather than sort of blasting him on social media.
Mm-hmm. That is true.
But I wouldn't have enjoyed that as much.
Right.
But you also educated a lot of people, too. I mean, even myself, like I'm now I'm like questioning the comedy and poking, and it's like, man, I hope I didn't do anything to offend someone or have them take it the wrong way.
But you don't know. And that's the thing. I mean, the waving, you can wave or send somebody a message if you want to connect with them if they're not in, you know, on the poking level. Exactly.
I don't know about this waving thing. It doesn't give me that suggestion.
I wave back. When people wave at me, I wave back. Generally, not always. Sorry, everybody.
Waving, I thought it does it when you're in, where it says nearby friends. It says if they're nearby, you can wave to them.
Oh, I thought it said they just added you as a friend.
It's only like certain settings.
It's the first base of Facebook interaction.
Where's the middle ground between waving and poking?
There is none.
No.
They're on Facebook. Totally separate.
Oh.
Yeah.
I think there's waving, and if you actually want to have a conversation or a reaction from somebody, say, hey, how are you doing is creepy too. Mm-hmm.
I always write, what are you doing with your life?
Really?
Yeah.
What are you doing with your life?
If I'm flirting with someone, that's why I know I'm a comedian. Hey, I ask you two questions. What are you doing with your life right now? And what's your favorite sandwich that you eat slowly with your eyes closed?
Oh, with your eyes closed. I like that question.
We need that Marvin Gaye song again.
And if they give me a dumb sandwich, I'm like, delete. I'm out.
A grilled cheese
sandwich?
Is dumb?
A ham sandwich. I'm like, listen, I'm Muslim. Give me a Reuben. We'll talk. A ham sandwich? Come on. Be
tuna
creative.
On rye.
Eat that tuna on rye slow. Oh,
there we go. See?
Eat it real. Take another bite.
Now this got real weird, but it's not poking. We're not talking about poking.
This is not poking.
I don't even know how to poke. I'm trying to find this out right now. Paul, can you...
Tom had to explode, by the way, in the producer's booth. He's like, Hannah doesn't know how to poke.
Oh, no. I just waved at Tom Dreesen. I didn't mean to do that.
That's okay. That's a good wave.
Well, I know, but I didn't mean to, bother him. I was
That's a good example. That's a good example. If Tom Dreesen poked me, that would be weird. I would be uncomfortable with that.
Yes.
Well, was Tom Dreesen ever your boss that gave you restrictions on things you couldn't do and then stopped booking you or whatever?
No.
Or gave you... Okay.
No critiques. No. Critiques, maybe. He's got a thing about clean comics, which is, you know, his purview, and he... What just happened?
I was just playing with my phone. I was just making noises. Sorry. I think it was Tom Dreesen talking. Sorry.
Tom Dreesen. He's got a story about Frank Sinatra. Look out. He does he teaches classes sometimes at the Laugh Factory, doesn't he? About how to conduct your career.
He did one. He was going to. Yeah, he does a one man show he is working on, and so he came there to talk. Yeah, he did a clinic once.
He has some great stories about him and Tim Reed as the black and white comedy team in the 70s. Mm-hmm. So
I toured with him a little bit. He had some great stories about Frank, for sure. And then asking him about the 70s comedy scene in L.A. is amazing, because if you read the book, I'm Dying Up Here, he was a big part of that whole with Mitzi.
Yeah.
She's with Mitzi Shore at the Comedy Store.
Mm-hmm. By the way, Mona, somebody asks in regards to the sandwich consumption,
yes.
How about a gyro?
Oh, yeah.
Right?
And so long as you got no plans later.
Right.
Onions.
You both have
tzatziki
to eat it.
Tzatziki sauce.
Tzatziki.
Oh, so much tzatziki sauce.
Hey, real talk, where are you at right now?
That's from the 574. I'm not sure how far away that is. There's a restaurant that has incredible chicken gyros, by the way, that I am in love with. It tastes like... I'll have to find it. It's in my Grubhub. I'll get it during the news.
Okay.
Because I have my order history.
Oh. And how late are they open?
I just had Greek food before I came
and
here.
And you said it right. You didn't say gyro.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God. I almost kissed you on the mouth. The way you said that was epic. Perfect. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Afaristo.
Do they have that at the pita inn? Do they have gyros?
No, they call it shawarma. That's one of the most international foods. Doner in Turkey, gyro or gyro in gyro in German and Greek, and shawarma, basically shaved meat.
Yeah, but the shawarma doesn't have the same spices that the gyro does.
It's close.
It's close, but I'm always like, it's not quite.
But
I don't know why.
But the shawarma is what, chicken or beef, right? And then the gyros,
yes,
or is it lamb also? Because the gyros is lamb.
Yeah. We're being told that that I am overthinking the Facebook poke. If I sent screenshots of all of the people who poked me, who just poke, I maybe that's what it is. It's the volume of poking.
Yeah,
that I'm like, why? You know, because
I think
alerts.
It's funny that you public. I just like watching the people defend their action. I mean, if someone did that to me too, I'd have to defend it. Like, oh wow, I don't remember that I poked you in 2007.
I have to see. I don't remember.
And it stays forever.
But again,
all the records.
I think in the end of the day, really, it isn't. You said you had 1,000 pokes.
Yeah.
It wasn't about the particular other people. It was this person was in a position of authority.
Right, previously.
Right.
Well, some of the other ones are people that don't know you. That's kind of creepy, too.
But you guys were engaged in a conversation, right. And then on the sly, it's kind of like, hey, real talk, if I poked you, right. And I was your boss, you're like, hey,
right.
Don't poke me. Nobody likes poking anyway. Are they going to add a shove button later?
Right. That's what I need. I need a, you know what?
You do need a shove button.
That's what it is.
Flick back.
Someone pokes you, you shove. I'm just saying. More after this on 720 WGN. Abhimishan has returned recently from some great adventures. We want to find out about it. You're listening live pretty late with Hannah Stanley and Patty Vasquez on 720 WGN. Joining us in studio is comedian Paul Farvar and comedian Mona Abhimishan. Hannah, have you ever been to Africa?
I've not. No, Amy Guth
You've
was
never
there.
Seen the rains
not
in Africa?
Long. I've not seen the rains in Africa.
Not. Paul, have you seen the rains in Africa?
No, but I've listened to the song. I covered it on stage.
I enjoy it immensely. Mm-hmm. So Mona, I'm sorry, Tom, have you ever seen the rains in Africa?
No, but I did bless the rains down in Africa.
Okay. Oh, well, that counts.
All right, then. Yeah. As Africa?
I've seen them. In videos.
I don't know, Vic Vaughn. Vic Vaughn's probably traveled more places than most of us have.
Vic Vaughn is a worldly fellow.
He's a very worldly fellow. Mona, tell us about your adventures.
Okay.
Tell us about this trip.
So around this time last year, I was working with an organization called Color Me Africa, and they support art in Cape Town and throughout all of South Africa, and they want to make sure that the artists in Africa get connected to the people purchasing their art here in Chicago. So I really love working with the organization based in Chicago. They like comedy, and they're like, you know, we should do a fundraiser, and we'll bring in a South African comedian. And they bring in an awesome South African comedian, Tracy Kloss. She comes in, we do shows. I have her on my show. She did Zany. She did the whole circuit. We did the fundraisers. And then she's like, I loved working with you, and I won't mimic the South African accent because I sound evil. And she's like, you got to come down. I was like, word. And so she set up the connection with the Cape Town Comedy Club, and I executed, and she hosted me, and I set it all up where I was doing the Cape Town Comedy Club, and then I headlined it, and this is one of the most important comedy clubs on the planet. It's rated huge. Oh my God, Patty, you'd love it. Oh my God, you'd love it. And I got set up with the scene, and the scene in Cape Town is so alive for one major reason that I took for granted until I was in it. The comedians support each other. They have each other's back from open mics to a lot of the they'll come out and like, hey, have you thought about moving this joke here? Not in a Chicago way where it's like they're trying to, you know, cramp your style, but like they want you to be better. And the reason why the comedy scene in South Africa is so powerful and inspiring and blah is because they just got freedom of speech.
Oh, right.
In 1994. Our roots of comedy in the States come from vaudeville. It almost has a stripper vibe. One comic yesterday, he's like, I feel like a stripper. I'm like, cool. I get that.
Well, because we feel like a piece of meat on stage.
Right. But imagine being in a country where it's all new.
And revered. Possible. It's probably revered.
Yeah, your voice. So when I got down there and I got to really get involved, all the comedians down there, there's almost like three tiers. Those that came together in the late 90s, they were all independent performers in the different ethnic groups. They came together and created the Comedy Collective. And they had each other's back. They booked each other. They did open mic workshops for each other. They said, this is how you have to show up. And they basically almost wrote a whole, any of the classes you take here all over the city of Chicago to learn how to do stand-up is stuff that they just kind of cultivated on each other, on their own. And they've really had each other back. So the roots of comedy in South Africa is extremely supportive. And so much so that even those guys are the ones that bred the ones that led to Trevor Noah. And then Trevor Noah in New York, he's bringing writers back and forth to South Africa all the time. And it's like, okay, there's some, a little kumbaya, it kind of sounds like I'm saying it. But in the end of the day, for real, they had each other's back in a way that was so inspiring that I brought that back here. And there was so much, just respect for me being a Chicago comedian from Chicago. Not, it wasn't like, oh, we got an American in town. is right. We got a Chicagoan.
Oh, see, and that's I like the distinction there too. Right. I like knowing that there's that sort of idea that people do come here. You were mentioning this on Chris and Mark Caro's show or before they were filling in for Justin Kaufman about people coming here. That this is Second City. This is Zany's and the independent comedy venues that you run one of those. Mm-hmm. You have the
Comedy Bowl.
With trivia and comedy. And when's the next night, by the way?
So we're right now we're on hiatus because there's doing construction in our bowling alley. So we're on hiatus. And also Chicagoans like to be outside. So the big clubs, I like to support the bigger clubs, independent stuff. I run my mic called The Riff and whatnot. But other than that, it's kind of like it'll come back in September. The other stuff I run is Tamale Hut. I was working on something with Divide and Conquer at the Laugh Factory. So there's other stuff I'm producing. And one of the things I really saw was this interest of South African comedians coming here. Because many of them, the good ones, make it to New York. They do the big shows. But then what?
Right.
They don't learn how to be like an American comic. So I'm like, you want to learn how to be American? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, you got to come to Chicago. Like, what could I do? I'm like, I'll give you somewhere to stay. I'll help you get hooked up. Wow. I got people in Detroit. I got people in Toronto. I got people in San Francisco. You want to be a real comic, like a global comic? They're like, yeah. And I've seen from the senior guys to some of the people, like, I was working with this guy named Long John. This guy is a Zimbabwean who would travel 5.5 hours to do 5-minute set in Harare.
What?
5.5 hours. And he would sleep at police stations so that he could do the next night.
You mean he would sleep in the parking lots?
No, in the police stations.
In the police stations?
So they would keep an eye on him. Yeah.
Because I used to sleep in parking lots and police stations.
He didn't have a car.
Churches. Oh, so how would he, was he taking buses?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Talk about a commitment.
Yeah.
That's a commitment. So the global comedy scene with its roots, and again, we're the grandfathers of comedy in the States. We had freedom of speech. Same thing with our friends in the UK. But the scenes that are coming up in the Middle East that I'm working through, the stuff in Germany, a lot of my own people that I've worked with here are in Germany now building in the Berlin scene. It's really good, and it is bilingual, and they really have so much respect for Chicago scene.
That's great to hear. What would you say the style is? Is it like we have, it varies from comic to comic. Some is autobiographical, some is political, some is, observational.
One of the things I see there is that the comedy really is about the audience.
Really?
It's not about, I'm depressed and I'm No, that it's not of that. It's like, it's about speaking some truth. Talking about, the repositioning of land, or it has a lot more of a black style, like a lot more, because that's what they were watching too, right? So like, remember Jokes and Notes? It was about the audience, where you have an entertainment conversation, not, so she decided to do 5 minutes of therapy on stage. Okay, awesome. You get I paid for a babysitter, right? I paid for a babysitter and parking. And all these drinks, and you're talking about how you don't feel good in pants. No, you're here to entertain me, baby.
Well, that's what, I've been watching. I went back and I was writing new material to work at Zany's last week, just to go back and try to get to the nuts and bolts of joke writing, because mine's all autobiographical and I do the one woman show. So I went through and I was watching the comics. I went through and I watched a lot of videos of comics who've been on Colbert, have been on Conan. And it's interesting because it's all kind of like this, It's a sort of the style that isn't me. Although Jake Johansson is brilliant at it, and he's an incredible joke crafter. But it's interesting that how do I put it? There's not a lot of depth to it.
Yeah.
It's all very, there's like a superficialness to a lot of it. Although Jake has there's a joke from Jake's from 2001, and he's talking about how, let me play the clip of Jake Johansson, because I think that it's actually interesting that he makes sort of a interesting social observation in a way that I don't think a lot of comics necessarily, although Pete Lee did this on his clothes on Jimmy Fallon's show. This girl asks him how he is in bed and he goes, consent,
see?
So there are some subtle ways to get it in there, but I feel like that's sort of the genre of getting on those late shows. It has to be like this ba-dum-bump sort of a style that I think, do you see any of that sort of style?
One of the things I see there, but I also see it here, and I've noticed in our scene, we've cultivated an audience that is now, they're senior citizens in comedy. They get it. They get your joke writing. They get that you have an act. It's like, give me the real stuff.
Yes.
And I think that it's almost like that Don Rickles approach, where it's like, we want to see you mess with us. We want to see live comedy on the fly. We get the set up punchline.
Right.
Right. Also, think about this. The other revolution that I've seen in comedy is we're tired of the Amy Schumer drunken sloppy chick a comic, because you can't say that and then be like, oh, female empowerment.
Well, and did you, did you see her Saturday Night Live monologue when she was talking about now she's married and still trying to do material about being single, right? And because she does all that. And Chelsea Handler, that's kind of been the style that has, the only thing that's been allowed from female voices has been like the vulgar, the, you know, doing all the sex jokes.
Yeah.
And that's unfortunate. I mean, Wanda Sykes breaks from that.
Yes. Thank you.
Right. Yes. But yeah, there aren't that many Wanda Sykes as far as the female voice in
not yet,
comedy.
Baby. Not yet.
Have you seen the Michelle Wolf's show?
Yes.
How was that?
She's epic. I mean, everyone's still talking about it, like, and I think that's what's needed now. And there's a hunger for it. So as you're going to start seeing female comedians step into their truth and their voice, it's inevitable. It's inevitable, and the audience wants it. And they want smart, they want intelligent, and they want it live. They don't want
and some of it's going to be angry. Some of it's going
to
be,
and
angry.
I don't think we're going to have to be. I mean, come
no,
on,
but some of it is.
I mean, unless you poke somebody before a show. Oh my god!
More, Paul. I'll take your thought after this.
I was just going to say, you said smart, and oh, I go, well, not everywhere. I was just in Reno, and they don't like smart.
Yeah, I know the feeling. More after that, not Reno. I'm just saying on the road.
No. Yeah.
More after this on 720 WGN. Of course, join our conversation if you have any thoughts. 312-981-7200. You can call or text us to that number. More in a moment on 720 WGN. For hanging out with us pretty late with Hannah Stanley and Patty Vasquez. What? Why do you laugh every time?
Because it's
I'm sorry
so
I couldn't take the night
show.
Off. I couldn't take the night off.
I didn't want you to take the night off.
I know.
Off.
There was confusion. There was a scheduling. There were supposed to be two producers and two hosts tonight. Not supposed to be. But that
I know. Tom and I actually discussed doing a mirrored show where we would be in a different studio. And then Michael would be producing you in this studio.
Oh, I like that.
And Tom and I could maybe, I don't know, be downstairs, be across the hall. And then at one point, we would just flip.
Yeah, I would have gone for that. I'm not sure if the engineers would have liked that. By the way, thank you to Bob Ferguson for making Antonio Dukas sound great.
Well, and, I don't think he had much work to do. Antonio sounded great anyway.
Yes,
but yes, Bob is fantastic.
Making sure everything went smoothly for everybody. But I think his head would have exploded if we were like, okay, here's the thing. We're do the first half hour from Studio A, and then the second half hour is going to be from Studio D. Yes,
and we're just and then in the third half hour we're just going to randomly give control to the other studios.
Yes, is that a problem for anyone else? No,
that's what we discussed.
Checking. We're talking about stand up comedy. Comedian Mona Amber Michan was in South Africa in Cape Town, and she was talking about how comedy is revered, the culture of comedy and the supportiveness. And I was talking a little bit about, you know, the comics that we grow to know are often the ones that are featured on The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon, of course, previously with all the way back to, you know, the beginning of television when The Tonight Show would have comics on, whether it was Jack Parr or, you know, Johnny Carson.
Jack Benny?
No, that hosted The Tonight Show. Someone's going to be mad and text me. Jack Parr. Alan? Nope, can't remember. I don't know his story. Anyway, they always had comics on, and that's how a lot of us are introduced to this world of comedy. It's a little bit more saturated now, but the style of comedy is pretty specific as far as the joke writing. But I think that there is a way to do cultural commentary, a lot of comics don't want to do that when they're trying to, you know, audition for something. But one of my favorites, and someone who appeared on David Letterman 45 times, truly one of the giants of comedy.
First one I ever saw live.
One of the kindest men alive. Yeah. Here's Jake Johansson with a joke that I love.
Oh, I'm going to vote. You got to vote. Even though a lot of times I don't feel like my booth is hooked up to anything. Do you get that sensation? I'm in there voting my ass off. You know, and I got nothing.
We'll talk about that joke in just a moment and why it's funny to me. Esmeralda, you have an update for us on traffic?
Yeah. So earlier I was saying there was a report of a crash. We're actually now hearing there is some police activity going on. This is on the southbound side of Lakeshore Drive, pretty much just before Ohio Street. Police have that area blocked off. We're hearing that there's lots of crowds of people there in the area. So police have Lakeshore Drive southbound blocked off starting at about just before the Oak Street curve. So we are seeing those delays start pretty much at about Chestnut right now. So just after that Oak Street curve, we have police blocked off the southbound side of Lakeshore Drive.
And we will keep you updated on that. Esmeralda will jump in as necessary. Thank you, Esmeralda.
No problem.
Of course. I also got a text from Roger Badish. It was Steve Allen that was the other host of...
Oh, right.
Yeah.
And 847 texted in as well. Thank you.
I know. Sorry. Thank you, everybody. That joke from Jake Johansson about the voting booth not being hooked up to anything, and he thinks he's got the Fisher-Price voting booth. What cracks me up about that is that I was up until... He and I were at the Ale House in Old Town till about... Till they closed. It's a 4 a.m. bar. During the time when we were still counting the hanging chads in Florida.
Oh, wow.
So it was interesting when I was going back and watching some old clips to realize that that joke was written for the 2000, like around the 2004 election, and it's sort of in reference to how frustrating it was. Yeah, it's a wonderful subtle joke about it. And Jake Johansson came up to me one night. I auditioned many times for the Letterman show, and I ate it one night. I absolutely I had such a tough time. Dobie Maxwell crushed, absolutely destroyed the room, and I went into this vault of silence because I wasn't Dobie Maxwell. When I walked on stage, you have that moment where you try to do every, you have the set that you have in mind and trying to, you know, dazzle him and show yourself. And it was silence for the whole 5 or 6 minutes. And I came off stage and Jake goes, you know, I really hope that Eddie saw what that was for the material that it was and the personality. He goes, that's David Letterman material. And I was like, and Eddie Brill saw me more than a half a dozen times and just said that I was not the right, you know, didn't have the right material. I wasn't cynical enough, that I was too cheerful. But that's something I always have, is that Jake Johansson told me I belonged on David Letterman. So that was, he's an incredible human being, one of my favorites, and a brilliant joke writer.
He's such a good joke writer.
So, I mean, and that's the thing too, is I'm trying to get back, as I mentioned, to the nuts and bolts of it and doing some of the, you know, trying to like write the joke without
the
saying
discipline
it.
Of
yes.
It.
And I haven't been doing that for a long time because, you know, life happens and you think, oh, I'll just get up on stage and throw out some premises and, you know, figure it. And we do. Some of us get into that rut. Or, okay, there was a comedian. I went back to Zanies to try to make sure that I was working on new material, and kind of beat myself up about that. You know, it happens. Mm-hmm. You know, we feel like maybe they've seen it. Yeah. And so it just so happened there was a comedian that I knew from my very first days as a comic, and he was one of my mentors and somebody that I looked up to, and I was telling him that. He goes, I feel that way too. He goes, you know, I get that. And he went on stage and he goes, I'm going to show you something. And he did a bunch of new material, and then he did material that I remembered from when I started, and he was like, it still works. I was like, okay. I was like, oh, I love him.
I just did 2 weeks of shows in Vegas and Nevada, and I worked with somebody who I worked with 3 years ago, and his material is, you know, definitely a completely different style than me. He's an entertainer. His name is Basil. He's great. He's he's not Harry Basil, but Basil. Himself. And he's a Greek comedian, and he does the same show, almost identical every night, and he crushes every time, and he avoids, you know, his message is to be an entertainer, and they come there entertained. So, you know, it's good to have a point of view. I like to have a point of view. Obviously, I like to do subtle jabs with political stuff in there. But in Nevada or like Las Vegas and Reno, like they don't want to hear that. They want to be entertained, and that's what he and some people just do it. And
yeah,
he's probably had the same jokes. I mean, my gosh, some of the stuff that he did, I'm sure, is 10 or 15 years old, but like whoever it is that you're talking about, it still crushes.
Yeah.
And I could never do that, because I just did 30 shows in 14 days, and after doing almost the same thing every night, I went to like shoot myself.
Did you want to poke yourself?
Yeah, I poked myself a lot. and then I shoved myself after. But no, like, I'm excited to come back to Chicago. Like Mona said, this is where you can work out some new stuff. There's enough rooms.
Yeah, like, so much stage time.
Yeah, you have so many places where I have like 3 new premises I came up with that I want to work on, because I'm so tired of 90% of my material.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was fun to do like 80% new material. I try to do this thing where if I'm doing old jokes, I stand on one foot.
You did that before. Yeah.
I stand on one
foot. You taught me that. I remember when you told me that. Yeah. I'm like, oh, maybe I'll do that. And then I tried. I was like, no, I'm not doing that.
This just looks weird. weird.
And she's usually in heels.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. We're getting some really great texts. Listening to y'all talk about the Chicago comedy scene gave me a great idea for you guys. Produce a comedy special or two and get a deal with Amazon or Netflix to air them featuring Chicago comedians. Those country boys started a trend tour. Oh, yeah, Chicago comedy tour. Like the
There's been a few.
They've tried. I know that a few of the guys actually tried the stand-up, Chicago stand-ups, stand-up, what, with Jimmy McHugh and a bunch of comics. We had a group going where it was Chicago-style stand-up.
Oh, yeah, with Bill Bunker and Paul Kelly. Paul Kelly,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bunch of us. I did a show with them.
Yeah. Those guys.
We had chairs with our names on them and everything. Yeah. And we actually try to do like sort of a round robin comedy thing too. You do your set and then you would try to do this thing where you would, one comic would start with a premise and if you had something that sort of dovetailed off of that. So that was a lot of fun to do too.
I did their show. We did that style in Eastern Illinois. It was really fun.
Yeah.
I did Jimmy's show.
That's very fun. Yeah, it was fun. That's a great venue too. Mona, tell us again where I'm not sending you anywhere, but I want to make sure people know where to find you.
So I'm going to be at the Second City Breakout Festival next week. So it's June 6th through the 9th. I'll be on the Friday show on the 7 o'clock. You talk about Chicago comics. It's going to be on at Second City that weekend. So please come out. Breakout Fest, Chicago Comedy, Second City. Excellent. Find me. Love you. Kiss you.
By the way,
grilled cheese.
No pokes.
Paul, you have an event coming up on Wednesday morning. You're going to be on TV.
We're doing the game show version. I used to have a show called Singles Only. It's a similar version. It's called Drink Date Laugh at Laugh Factory on Fridays. We're doing a segment on WCIU, the Jam Show, on Wednesday morning.
That's excellent. Yeah, and you can find his podcast, Singles Only.
iTunes. Yeah, we did one this week without any adult supervision. Patty wasn't there and Jeannie wasn't there, so we had two single people talking.
Were you in Vegas? Is that why?
No, it was here in Chicago before I left with Christina Walkinshaw. She's an amazing comedian, but like it was the longest podcast we ever had because nobody was keeping us in line. It was still fun. It was like one of my favorite ones because we got into some. If you were there, you would have loved the conversation we talked about.
You should Everyone see should listen Hannah to might run might be great at being your riding shotgun. She's married. Been married for a long time. Successfully.
In the lineup.
Yeah, it was my anniversary yesterday-ish. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, 12
Happy
years.
Happy anniversary.
Really romantic.
Thank you. Yeah, 12 years.
Are you good at remembering your anniversary?
Clearly not.
Yeah. Well, no, because we're after midnight, so that's why I always get messed up.
Good save.
Yeah, no, I am. We don't do anything. Someone is always sick for our anniversary.
Aww.
12 years running, somebody in the family's sick. So we're like, okay, well, pizza?
I'm turning the show over back to Hannah after the news. Let's do. I know you had stuff like you had other ideas and stuff.
All right, I'll go to the bag.
Go to the bag.
All right.
Not me. I can be the bag if you want me to be the bag.
No.
But more conversation when we come back. Quick break and then the news. Checking out what restaurants are still open at this hour, and I'm sorry to say that the restaurant that I mentioned earlier that has excellent chicken gyros is not open for deliveries, which is the Salam restaurant on Kedzie. And you're familiar with this restaurant?
Shout out Salam.
So good. They have I'm telling you, Hannah, I'm kind of in pain right now knowing I can't have any tonight.
No, I'm trying to figure out because I make really good tzatziki. So I'm like, I wonder who has the cucumbers I need because I can get home I can make my own tzatziki and then put it on crackers. I don't care because it would just be because really most of my need for gyros is just as a vehicle to get the tzatziki in my mouth.
I need the seasoning from the gyros. That's what I love too. If I could do that on like less
like pita, but I can buy semi-decent pita at the store.
Yes.
With the supplies I need for tzatziki, and then I can, that's a party. Right.
That's why I love Salam. They give you like, when you have a decent sized order, they give you like the whole sleeve of pita. I'm not going grocery shopping this week.
We have so much in the bag. Just take one bag for you, okay? Don't worry, I won't charge you for it. You're like, listen, I'm going to come in here later and say my butt's too big.
The delivery guy always gets a little bit, he gets a little apprehensive because I very nearly throw myself at him when he brings the delivery. I'm like, thank you so much. You guys are amazing.
Have you guys been in
the restaurant?
No, have you?
I have.
And? Oh.
They're very good looking.
Oh.
People who work.
That was
there.
Really not where I thought that was going.
No. I didn't.
There's a couple guys and I'm like, hi.
Very hot.
How close do you live to the salam?
Oh, like walking distance.
Oh,
a few minutes. Yeah.
Am I right about, have you tried the chicken gyro?
I have not. I usually get the executive lunch dish, which is like rice hummus, and then they give you a little bit of steak and the
baba
sausage.
Their baba ganoush is good too. Oh,
yeah, the baba ganoush is good.
Kifta kebab.
Yes, kifta kebab.
Do you
I
have
love
binoculars
kifta.
That you watch them from a distance. It sounds like
no, I go in.
I get the executive. No, you don't.
No, that's like the $6.99 deal.
I don't know that I've ever seen an executive anything.
Yeah,
at
they have a whole
Yeno's
thing
place.
Of like an executive lunch, business
I
lunch.
I think the hot guy was called you executive because you seemed like a big deal. Everyone else, it's combination plate one, combination plate two.
I know.
But for you, it's executive.
I know. I'm trying to find it on there. They don't have it on
you
their
want the rice?
Home.
No rice?
Potatoes? They just have it for you, Ez, because I don't see executive.
No, they got a big old poster in the dang store for it.
They see you coming. Put
they
the poster
do.
Up.
Put the poster up.
That they have. I'm going through the. I'm making myself so crazy hungry right now looking at their menu.
I know.
When I was in South Africa, there was a woman who came to the comedy show, and she's a celebrity chef down there. And she's like, I've been wanting to do this thing. And I watch what is the most watched content on the globe, and it's comedy shows and cooking shows.
No. Mm-hmm.
She's like, Mona, would you want to do a cooking show with me? And
yes,
we can
ma'am.
Laugh. Mm-hmm. And I was like, absolutely, because comedians don't eat before our shows, so we're all late night eaters, and we know that there's certain things to stay away from, and there's, you know?
Do we?
And, well,
I'm just kidding. I don't
think about
mom.
The most successful comics become in Hollywood, and they get a stable show, they start dropping that weight because they're not on the road eating, you know, gyro at like 3 a.m, right?
Yes. Right.
And so we did this awesome, we filmed this footage, and she's going to be rolling them out, and that was the first episode.
What?
I was like, let's do it tomorrow. We got together, and she taught me and then the camera guy, who was obviously hungry, how to cook really just quick, something quick when you get home so that you're not bringing home packaged food. It's like a pasta and a quick cream and like mushroom sauce. And some little bit of onions, and
I
she's
love
like,
that.
Just a little bit of this and a little bit of that. I'm like, oh my God, it was like, it literally took 10, 15 minutes. It was so great. We laughed, it was hilarious. And I think I think the fact that we eat so late is one of our downfalls as comics.
Yeah, no, I was noticing that the other day. I was on the scale, I was like, huh, this is, it's been a long winter. And take care of this at some point.
They say the summer bodies are made in the winter, and my summer body is made 2 winters ago. It's going to take longer to work it off. Yeah.
Come on, Pat. You're a beast.
I haven't done CrossFit as consistently as I had been in the past. I have to start getting back to it. But
okay.
Yeah, I'm doing more stuff at home and walking and things like that. I start running and I'm like, can I just walk now?
Yeah.
Every time I go for a run, I'm like,
what about bike? You bike?
I do bike.
That's so fun.
I did not bike the drive yesterday, though. I had the packet and everything. I was ready to go. And Michael Heidemann and I were still messaging at like 3 a.m. Like,
so you'd run up?
Yeah.
Are you going now?
If I go to sleep now, it's 3 a.m. I have to be there by 6 a.m. It's not. I mean, it
when
doesn't
when's the
seem...
nude bike ride? That's my favorite. I always accidentally
in
bump into it.
It's in June.
Tom Hush, have you been a witness to the naked bike ride?
Yes.
Okay.
It was myself and the fantastic Amy Guth here on WGN. We had a guest downstairs, and all of a sudden, like, we were doing a show downstairs in the Allstate studio. All of a sudden, just naked men.
Yes.
Just,
yeah. Only men?
Oh,
no,
yeah,
it started off
too.
With just men.
Okay.
And then everybody else came in, and we were so confused because we were doing kind of like a serious topic. We're talking about like climate change. And we're like, oh man, the earth's really hot.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden,
and
naked
we're like,
folk.
And that's why they're not wearing clothes.
Bingo.
Yeah. And I love that the guys were ahead. They were racing to get away from what? Dude, you want to be behind. You want to check out the, you know.
No, we were, it was my son's baptism down here in Chicago. And so we were staying at a hotel downtown. And my husband and I are standing on, you know, we're walking back to the hotel with our, I don't know, 6 to 8 month old son. And all of a sudden I was like, wait, what? And then you kind of want to protect the baby, right, from seeing. And then I was like, I don't care. And then and then you get over the shock, and then you start looking at faces trying to figure out if you know any of them.
I don't think I distinguish.
You're like, is that Bob?
Is that
Bob?
Mayor Emanuel?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yes.
The weirdest thing is being caught in a, I was in a cab. And yes. And so now you're like eye level with like just bikes. I'm like, I'm just going to be on my phone.
My God. Getting stuck in. Yeah. I wanted to get tourists stuck with me. Hey, you want to go for a ride? And we just get stuck just watching nakedness after nakedness in Greek town.
And there's a lot of body paint.
Yes.
Oh. There's a lot of body paint.
As have you been witness to the naked bike
or
ride?
Partaking?
I have seen it. Mm-hmm. Yes. And I try to keep eye level.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Eye contact.
Just it's all right. I mean, I just always wonder about I feel like my clothes help me a little bit with the seat not getting too aggressive.
There's a lot of chafing issues.
Yes. Yeah. Is what I'm saying.
And not everyone wants to see someone's full shawarma. They don't want to see they don't want to see your kebab, right? It even can be executive or not.
Especially if there's Baba Ghanoush involved. Do not. Oh, there's so much going on. That all happened. Maybe I would go to a break, but this has been too much. See how we brought it back to food.
I think I know. And then I'm like, tzatziki. And that doesn't work. No? So I'm just letting it go.
Oh, no. That's what I want to ask you before we go to the break. And this might take longer than that, but that's okay. Because Esmeralda, I learned last week, owns an extraordinary number of gadgets.
Okay.
And I realized after I left, I'm like, there are ones I still hadn't asked you about, Esmeralda. But I can't remember now. I was like, I wonder if she has this. And I wonder if she has that. I know what it was. A fryer. Do you have a fryer? Like they
I
have like
don't. I have a Dutch oven.
Uh-huh.
So I just use that to fry.
You just do that. Do you have a fryer? I'm guessing you have a lot of gadgets as well, Miss Hannestein.
I have so many gadgets that sometimes I have three of the same gadget.
Oh, really?
There's been a massive purge happening for the past 2 years. I don't have a fryer. My dad has two. So if I need a fryer, I go there.
I'm curious about this thing called the air fryer, though.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty great.
See?
Yeah.
That's what I'm curious about. Mona, do you have a lot of kitchen?
I want to go back to this Dutch oven. I thought it meant something else. I didn't know there's actually...
I mean, it also means that, but...
I didn't know!
What does it also mean? Years?
It's a noun and a verb.
What's a Dutch oven? I don't know.
Just go to break, Patty. You don't want to know.
Okay, tell me about it during the break.
I feel like she can Google it, but do it on the company computer.
Yeah. That's what all my producers love. Just don't make me Google it. Please don't make me Google that. I don't care what's in the box. More after this on 720 WGN. We are heading into the home stretch. Nick D is up next. It's been lovely hanging out with host Hannah Stanley and Mona Abimashan, who is performing next week at the Breakout Fest next Friday night at Second City. And while we were off the air, I found out the Dutch oven is not that filthy.
No big whoop.
I mean, it's gross, but it's not that filthy.
Eh.
I mean, yeah, it's fit for air.
It's like a camp thing.
It is air. And I have a joke about it in my act about when I was pregnant. I've talked about this where, when you're pregnant, it's a whole new level of gassiness. And I was telling the audience that, you know, my husband was terrified. And every time I let one go, I was like, the baby says hello. And I'm like, he loves you. And he's like, well, tell him to shut up. It smells like he hates me. And I told the audience I didn't torture him by pulling the blanket over his head and trapping him with it. And I didn't realize the name for it was a Dutch oven.
Right. Now we know.
So now I know. So then you don't have to feel like you're out.
This is so Paul Harvey. And now you know the rest of the story.
I just want to help everybody. But there are like Latino last names that also mean other things that I didn't understand any of those. And don't Google them. No. Dirty things. Dirty, dirty, dirty things. Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Okay, exactly.
Sure.
So I feel kind of good that wasn't that bad. But in the kitchen, a Dutch oven, Esmeralda, is kind of a bowl over a pot. Isn't that kind of?
It's a cast iron.
Cast iron with
enameled
a lid.
cast iron pot.
See there? Now you know the rest of that.
Now I know.
Yeah.
See?
The more Mo knows.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great for doing frying in because you have it. It has great heat retention, and so you're going to keep a constant temperature on your oil. It's very deep, so you're not going to get a lot of splatter.
Excellent.
I endorse the use of the Dutch oven for
Excellent.
The frying.
I made oven roasted okra last night, and it was frozen okra that roasted up really well with some curry,
oh, nice.
Just some curry powder and some salt and pepper. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed
nice.
That tremendously. Very
you know,
healthy.
Tzatziki sauce could go well.
That would have been so good with the tzatziki.
See, you just need to call.
I'm just saying. I didn't
have your mom book me.
Mom. My mom's just sending guests. I do laugh when people ask me, how do I get on your show? I'm like, talk to my mom now.
Abuelita.
I like
I'm
that.
Just saying. To yeah. get the, she's not on social media, so good luck finding
oh, I
her.
Know.
That's the whole point.
I've
that
looked.
Shows how interested you are.
There you go.
Yeah.
Now my mom is very funny. Esmeralda, a texter from the 301 says you need to do a round of would Esmeralda buy that?
Yes.
On Nick D's show.
I'll let
them
know.
Yeah, exactly. I love that. I'm like Ez. There's some quirky things I would buy. I just I love at Walgreens that they have the Ez seen on TV aisle.
Oh yeah, and CVS.
And CVS. Yes. Mm-hmm. There's that one thing that I bought. It's like the it looks like a lipstick tube, but you can use it to like get rid of some of the hairs. The random
yeah, but
hairs.
Is that just a random shaver?
Yeah, it's like a little coil shaver. It's fine.
Is it weird that I usually want to sit and stand by the Essien on TV and just stand there? And they're like, "Why are you here?" Well, I was on TV. I was
Essien on TV.
I was Essien on TV.
Just get that logo on your shirt. Yeah.
There you go. By the way, we were talking about this off the air as well. These are the, you know, that's going to be a whole segment. What we said off the air, which was you had on your show on Friday night talking about dumpster diving and wanting to salvage some of the things that are being ripped out of the Tribune Tower.
Yeah.
We are days away from permanently moving out of the Tribune Tower. So this might be your last show in the studio. I'm sorry.
No, it's a dream come true.
Well, maybe we'll have your parents in the new station so they can help us christen it over there. Mm-hmm. The photos in the hallway, the iconic photos. Of all the legend, like all the way back to the 1930s. I mean, mm-hmm. I think even the 20s have been taken down in our main hallway.
Yeah, they were taken down today.
They were taken down, mm-hmm. And also in the near the newsroom, those photos are down. And
sad. There were Wally Phillips Street and Bob Collins.
That's
like
right.
Their street signs were up on the wall. Those are gone. There's really just iconic things. Those are all being protected. Those are not going in the dumpster. Those I would dive after. But yeah, there's a lot of insulation in things also in the dumpster, but I'm always like, every time I walk by, I'm like, does that mean anything to me? I mean, this is I'm third generation,
right?
Having worked in this building, and which screams nepotism, and that's not how that worked. But yeah, there's things that like I want to have a little bit of something from this building.
Well, we'll find. Let's go find something after the show.
Okay.
All right then. We can go to other floors. Do you
remember? Matt Bubala went to other floors.
Yeah, you know, I won't tell you who's been doing it, but someone's been going to other floors.
I have a Swiss Army knife.
Done. See, and book it. Come.
That's what I thought was that they should have given us an opportunity. Like, you know, you can bring a hammer and an axe and maybe a screwdriver. Like, bring whatever tools you have, and these are the floors that you can just completely take stuff from. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although they probably don't want you messing with like electrical and stuff.
No, and there are danger. Absolutely historic things that should not be touched.
Right. That's, yeah. If they should just like, you should be
Except
able to go
for
through.
Half of that stuff's already in the dumpster. So.
Or I wish we could have gone through with like Post-its and with your name on it. And
like
say,
you do at your grandparents' house.
Yes.
Yeah.
I know. That's exactly what I was
like,
thinking.
Like, I want this oil painting.
Not for mm-hmm. nothing. Should you decide you're going to part with this?
I call like, grandma. Take grandpa.
Just saying.
Well, like your crazy cousin walks in and goes, I want this painting. It's like, Post-its on the back. It's
already too late. Can't
Sorry.
Have it.
Suck it.
So I'm going to go downstairs and I think I'm going to grab some stuff from downstairs. I don't know. Okay, here's another issue I'm having. I don't know how to turn the flat pieces of cardboard into a box. I'm struggling with that.
Oh, I just did a whole in school field trip for my first grader.
Yeah.
I can teach you that.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that box. Because I make it, it's got four sides to it and no top or bottom to
mm-hmm.
it.
That's not good.
Just like, I can't put anything in this box. Let's take a break here and then we're turning it over to Nick D. More in a moment on 720 WGN. All right, I'm going to head downstairs and grab some things that aren't nailed down. I think I'm going to take, I want to know when I can have... And as this probably sounds gross, I want a couple of the chairs from the studio downstairs at some point. But does it seem like too many butts have been in those seats?
You don't think we're going to take those?
No, we're getting new chairs for the at the new station. I think. I don't know. But there are people that really want those high back like captain looking chairs. Do you know what I'm talking about, Hannah?
Yep.
The ones that are like silver and black. I think they were Gary Myers. They had brought them and he liked those.
Yes.
But the armrests are too low. I never liked those. Like I like the armrests to be
a little bit. Can't you pop them up?
No, not on that. Not on that one. Okay. Like this one, boom, done.
Yeah,
I'm
done.
More comfortable now.
Nice.
But
custom.
There are two down there that I really like. I want at least one of them.
Are they not coming with us?
No. I talked to Todd. I have to ask if I need to put a Post-it on something before somebody else. Because people were taking stuff and they had to stop people. Like, hey, you know, we're not done with these things yet.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what happens. I took a couple of hole punches, but they were on the... I have a lot. Esmeralda and I took a lot of three-ring binders. Ez was doing something very kind with them, sending them down for... Where were we sending them, Ez?
There was someone in my neighborhood was doing... they're doing a trip down to... I don't remember. It was a Latin American country, but they were taking them for the kids.
For school.
Yeah, for school supplies.
I just know...
Yeah, that's better than what probably...